My name is Nicole Pucci, and you're listening to Ralph Pucci, the podcast. You're listening to Season 2, and our theme for this season is Power Couples in the Arts. Ralph and I are absolutely thrilled to share the conversation we had with jazz legends Christian McBride and Melissa Walker. Christian is one of the most prominent bass players in the industry. He is a six-time Grammy Award-winning artist and has performed with musical icons including Wynton Marsalis, Herbie Hancock, Sting, Paul McCartney, and many, many more. Christian also hosts his own Sirius radio show called Conversations with Christian and supports Melissa with her work running Jazz House Kids. As many of our listeners know, Jazz House Kids is a very important organization to us here at Pucci. We've partnered with them for 4 years to host an annual concert to raise funds for the important work that they're doing. Melissa started Jazz House Kids nearly 20 years ago, and it has given countless students access to an excellent musical education. Melissa runs Jazz House Kids with tenacity and grace. She's also a well-known and super talented jazz singer. We hope you enjoy today's conversation. Thanks for listening in. All right. Good afternoon, Christian and Melissa. We are so happy to have both of you here today for our second episode of Season 2 of Ralph Pucci, the podcast. The theme of this season is Power Couples in the Arts, and I could not think of a more phenomenal couple to have than the two of you. So without further ado, I'm going to let Ralph introduce the two of you, and let's get this conversation going.
Well, before we get started, I just want to wish Ray Brown a happy birthday, Christian. How do you like that? Now, you know I like jazz, but yeah. I have to be quite honest with you. I really didn't know that. I have Ruben Cadelli here today because we're opening our factory floor.
Yeah.
He's performing. And I said I was going to be with you guys in 10 minutes. And he says, get Christian. Tell him that Ray Brown's birthday is today and that you have one of Ray Brown's basses.
That's right.
That's right. So
Ray Brown's like a national holiday for us here in this house.
Well, I can imagine he's a national holiday for many. So I just want to introduce you to my audience. My audience is obviously, you know, the arts. It's furniture. It's sculpture. It's photography. Anything that is creative. And that's how we got to know each other, because I feel music is just, is just the thread that ties it all together with Pucci. And I was very fortunate one time when one of my friends was in my showroom and he was listening to the music. I think we had Miles Davis on or the Modern Jazz Quartet. He says, Ralph, you're always playing jazz music here. Have you ever thought of having a jazz performance? Because you've had dance performances, you've had classical performances here, but you never had jazz. I said, well, you know, you have to really do that well. He goes, what if I introduce you to Christian McBride and Melissa Walker? I said, well, then we could possibly talk. And that's how we met, and that's how we started to work together with the Jazz House Kids, and we've been together for 4 years now, and 4 years and counting. So welcome. I think my audience is going to really enjoy a conversation with you, because to me, music is one of the greatest creative forms of expression that there is. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's been really exciting watching all that you've been doing all these years, always calling, hearing. You know, one of my first times that I visited, you had a dance performance around the wonderful sculptures that were on the floor. It was really incredible. And then I just think whenever we've done the Pucci events, we're always meeting your visual artists. They're so incredible. They paint, they design clothing, they design furniture. And I think that kind of speaks to when you're creative, then every aspect of who you are just tends to imbue that sense of creativity. And, and watching you, Ralph, is just like watching this creative genius at play. You know, you get an idea and you can literally see the wheels turning and you start thinking about it. And, you know, we'll talk about a concert. You're visualizing where it's happening. You know, we're thinking about the notes on the page. You're seeing it float in your space. And I just think that's what's so exciting about, you know, getting to know you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and that's what that's why Ruben's downstairs right now in the opening of the new floor. When I saw the sculptures from Abigail Azara Simpson, I saw these like Greek Roman ruins, and I see Ruben playing amongst it. And as soon as I saw the work, I said we have to call him up, and he said that he would love to do it. So yeah, it's a visual business, and we have a lot of fun with it. So. Yeah.
Jazz House Kids has been a really important part of Pucci for the last several years. Most of our audience does know about you, but for those few people that might not, we'd love to hear more about the organization you two started. How did that all come to be?
You know, opportunity meets not necessarily preparedness. You know, about 20 years ago, I was asked to do a program for kids with WBGL, and I thought it was going to be a concert. And a few days before, they said, well, we don't really want a concert. We'd like to have kind of a learning class experience. And, you know, we will have kids from 2 to 12 and their parents. And I thought, well, what the heck is that going to be? I had great trepidation to put this on. I was ready to do a concert and thought that would be wonderful. But then I remembered what I love most about this music, and that it's this global nature. And that we can all come together. You know, Ralph, when we walk into the studio, we know you love jazz. We're hearing it. You know, we're already speaking the same language. And so at that point, I thought, let's discover and let's build this jazz house, literally from the foundation up, which is the drums. And let's tell the story of our lives through the music. You know, little did I know it would really kind of become my life's work as it has. Because it just struck a chord that this American music that is revered around the world really has these tenets that are a part of it that are so foundational to who we are in terms of collaboration, in terms of listening to one another, in terms of this democracy of being the leader, not being the leader, working collaboratively and collectively. It just resonated. And then what we found is that young people love this music. They love this opportunity to play this angular quirkiness and unusual music of Thelonious Monk, but to then just be swinging ahead and play these great bassy charts. This idea that you can improvise and take the tools and then rearrange those tools to tell your story. So there was so much there that every time we did the program of Let's Build a Jazz House, more and more kids came around it. And I became much more serious about it as we saw the dearth of music. And Nicole, you know that, of what's in the school and the inequity that's happening in many school districts, that we just felt that there was a place for us to bring this great American music that's revered around the world, but to bring it in their classroom and to teach them lessons, what I like to say, on the bandstand and off. And some, you know, 18 years later, we're still swinging and you know, our kids are, you know, incredible. And you've seen them. They're out in the world making their way. Some of them are on the bandstand making their way. Others are, you know, in the science lab or in a classroom or whatever, but they're civic minded. They have empathy. They have like-minded peers. And it's been very, very rewarding to see that. And you guys gave us such an incredible stage these last 4 years to bring forth not only a spectacular night, but, you know, quite frankly, to raise the vital funds that are needed to keep an organization such as ours, you know, swinging straight ahead. So it's been pretty spectacular.
Though we've had, you know, obviously four tremendously talented artists perform with Christian, everyone always comes up at the end of the night and say, you know, phenomenal evening, but those kids, they're so good. We love it. So we've talked about it. We said the next one, maybe the kids will play even a little bit longer. The people just love to hear the kids play, and they're good.
Yeah.
And as a former public school teacher, I can't thank you enough for doing this program. Music in schools really is just becoming less and less common every single year. So what you all are doing is truly amazing. And in my research for this podcast, I've read that both of you started playing
Melissa, you played the bassoon, right, in middle school. And Christian, you started on the bass young. Christian, I know you grew up in a family of professional musicians, and I read that your great uncle was a big influence in your life, especially in introducing you to jazz. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit about sort of growing up in such a musically oriented world, and specifically on the influence that your uncle had on you.
Absolutely. First of all, I was born and raised in Philadelphia, which is one of the greatest towns, not just for its jazz legacy, but just for its arts legacy. There are so many great artists that span all across the artistic spectrum from Philadelphia. So chances are, no matter what era you grew up in Philadelphia, you're going to be somewhat well-versed in the arts. And to have a dad who's a professional bass player, and to have a great uncle that's a professional bass player, and an uncle who worked in the radio industry, it was predestined. I was going to have some sort of life in the music industry.
You had no choice.
I had no choice, nor did I want a choice, you know.
And your mother?
You know, well, my mother is a public school teacher, you know, but she always had the ears of an artist. So even though she doesn't play an instrument, she could be a very good producer or an A&R person at a record label, you know. But yeah, I saw my dad play a lot when I was a kid. He was playing bass with the great Cuban percussionist Mongo Santa Maria. And the music just got into me. Watching my dad play, going to live shows with my mother and my uncle, I saw every R&B and rock star I ever wanted to see as a kid. You know, I saw the Isley Brothers, James Brown, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Smokey Robinson. You know, this is all by age 7. You know, I saw Michael Jackson in 1979 at the Spectrum. And so, like, just all of these things just kind of got into me. And just before my 9th birthday, I asked my mother for an electric bass. And I started playing the electric bass and just playing around at home, listening to the radio. You know, my dad would show me a few things here and there, but mostly I didn't know what it was called, but I was teaching myself ear training. And I would listen to all of my mother's R&B and soul records and try to figure out what the bass player was playing, and then I'd copy it. And so my mother said, oh, you're serious about this. It's time to get you some training. So she sent me to a middle school, Pepper Middle School in Southwest Philadelphia, and they had a very reputable music program. And that's when I started playing the acoustic bass. And I got my first private lessons, started playing in the orchestra, took theory lessons and all of that kind of stuff. So pretty simultaneously, my great uncle, the other bass player in the family, he's also the jazz historian of the family. He said, well, now that you're playing the upright bass, it's time to turn you on to the real stuff. And he brought me over to his apartment and he gave me like a crash course in the history of jazz in maybe 6 or 7 hours. And he played me everything from, it was real bass heavy. So he played me a lot of Ray Brown, a lot of Charlie Hayden, a lot of Jimmy Garrison, a lot of Paul Chambers, a lot of Percy Heath, all the Charles Mingus, all of the great jazz legends. And I got to say, because of that one day at his house, he hooked me on jazz forever.
That's amazing. As a child, who were some of your favorite artists?
Well, out of all of those recordings that my uncle played for me, I would say the one that really got me was a live concert from 1953. It's called Jazz at Massey Hall. Massey Hall is in Toronto. And there's a legendary concert that featured Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Bud Powell, Charles Mingus, and Max Roach. And that was the album that sealed the deal for me, because I was 11 when I heard that record. And that was in 1983. The biggest album in the world in 1983 was Thriller. And so I would listen to Thriller, and then I would listen to, like, you know, Prince's 1999, and then listen to Jazz at Massey Hall, and the energy didn't change. Like, something about the energy of that jazz concert, like what Bird and Dizzy were playing on that recording, I wasn't missing the keyboards and, you know, all the big loud drum beats and things like that. There was so much fire and passion and energy coming from that record. I thought, man, I really want to get deeper into this music. Then I started listening to Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Bud Powell, Thelonious Monk, Ella Fitzgerald. It, like certain people I already knew were great, you know, like Duke Ellington was sort of like Babe Ruth. Even before I knew who he really was, I just knew the name, you know. Count Basie, certain people are just such a part of American culture. You just know their names, even if you don't know their music. But after that Charlie Parker record, I did a deep dive into all of it.
That's great. And it's so impressive that you were able to appreciate both sort of like the common pop music of the day, as well as the classics and the jazz. I think that's impressive too, that your parents didn't try to dissuade you from listening to the popular music at the time to focus on that jazz.
You know, I actually will credit my great uncle with that very much so, because, and I say this lovingly, but Melissa can attest to this, that sometimes jazz lovers have a tendency to keep their music so close. They love it so much. Sometimes there's a dogma that goes with that, you know. And my great uncle was sort of like, hey, look, I know you love James Brown. I know you love Earth, Wind & Fire. It's all related. There's no need to stop listening to that in order to appreciate the other. So I really credit my great uncle wholeheartedly with that one. He never made me feel bad for liking pop music.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You beat me to the punch. I had written down some things that, you know, we've known each other for a while, but, you know, you think of the name, you mentioned Babe Ruth, and I was thinking that, you know, there's Louis Armstrong, there's Charlie Parker, Duke Ellington, Thelonious Monk, Miles Davis. I mean, gigantic names. I mean, boy, is that iconic names. And then you think about sports, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth, Roberto Clemente. I mean, those names, those jazz names are just as important as the sports guys. I mean, but I think the future of jazz is really great with people like you and with Marsalis and a lot of the other names. I mean, I think there's a big future where sometimes, you know, music or sports goes through a dip. And I think that the future of jazz is really great. Like I said, you're the voice of the future with Whit Marsalis. What do you think about that?
Well, I want to, you know, Melissa started Jazz House Kids already by the time we met. So I really have to say that I'm so proud of what I would say what we've created, but really Melissa started this whole thing. I came in while the train was already moving. You know, I helped the train move a little faster.
Yeah,
but
you put a few stories on that, Alex.
But you know what Melissa has created with Jazz House Kids, and it's sort of the it's another version of what jazz has always been. That sort of mentor, mentee, apprentice model, you know. Another reason why I got into this music and wanted to be a professional musician is because people like Wynton Marsalis, who was still in his mid-20s when I first met him, people like Kenny Barron, the late Grover Washington Jr., Max Roach, Dr. Billy Taylor, they would come to Philadelphia and they would give these master classes or workshops. And, you know, I'm 13, 14 years old, and me and Joey DeFrancesco, all of our classmates, we were sitting there in this classroom with Max Roach, you know, and we're sitting there like, that's the drummer from the Jazz at Massey Hall concert. You got to be kidding me, you know. And that's him right there in front of our face. And because they were so gracious and giving with their time, that really got us. And I thought that if I'm ever in that same position, it's a no-brainer. You got to bring up the younger generation. You can't sit around and shake your head and say, you know, all these young folks don't know what's happening. You got to show them what's happening, you know. Yeah. And Jazz House is a way that we can do that. And how to link that with baseball is that, you know, I remember there being a lot of little league teams growing up in Philadelphia, and a lot of these like sort of places where you no longer see little league teams. You don't see baseball programs for younger people like you used to, at least 35, 40 years ago. I don't see it the same way. And so therefore you probably do see less diversity in baseball than you did in the 70s and 80s and early 90s. And so baseball could probably use Jazz House Kids in places like Newark and Philadelphia and Detroit and Chicago and places where, families of you know, middle to lower income can still have an opportunity to compete with the baseball stars of today, you know, and kids that come through those programs in Florida and Texas and California, you know?
You know, and I was thinking that, you know, you're really talking about finding the greatness in every person and finding what's unique and what that person has to bring to bear and give. And I think that's really our role, is to help young people find where their gifts are and bring those gifts out. And I mean, I think about some of the young people around Jazz House. You know, there's a young woman right now, she's getting, you know, going into cybersecurity. She was in our big band, you know, for years and moved on. Then we have young people who are, you know, at Juilliard, and they're going to be your players of tomorrow. But then you have, you know, kids in all walks of life. But, you know, when I look back, I think about when I started singing, you know, sitting in the audience of Sarah Vaughan night after night, watching how she sang, how she phrased, what was different when she sang a song one night to next. Betty Carter, you know, came to see me perform, and I, you know, that was about a chilling experience. She sat right up front. She knew what she was doing. She was feet from me. I was dying inside. And then after, she said, come sit down, and, you know, really wanted to give me her thoughts and what she, and her idea on what you needed to do to move forward. Ray Brown, you know, playing, speaking of him, playing for his 75th birthday. I remember being in Vienna and walking on stage and hearing this incredible sound. But more than the sound, I swear the floor was moving when he played that bass. And then traveling through Europe with Hank Jones, you know, who still had a lot to say about Ray Brown, because Ray Brown was a force, you know. You were going to do it his way or the highway. And he said, here I am, a grown man, and he's still picking my songs, picking the tempos. We had a song that was just the two of us, but Ray would pick the tempo.
And he wasn't even playing
in the song. And he's like, you know, here I am, a grown man, elder, and he's still telling me what to do. But when I think and bring that forward, like Christian, to watch Diana crawl, kind of like come alive at your studio, hearing the students. And she said, boy, it brought her back to when she was 16 and 17, just full of imagination, full of just wonder. Dee Dee Bridgewater, who, you know, our students go to see Dee Dee, and she'll sit down with them and talk to them about their craft, but just about anything, you know, and also just about how to get on stage and what are the things you should be thinking about. Gary Bartz, who did my first record on Andrew Records, and then said, you know, let's think about the key change. Think about the, you know, how to move from one song to another. Like, you're not going to get that if someone doesn't pass that down to you. And I still think of Gary when I put a set together. You know, I still think about, you know, Betty Carter saying, Melissa, let's get some of those up tempos together. I still think about these people, Ray Brown. And so it's our job to do that for others. And what is so rewarding now is that these young people are coming back and they're passing it along. And they're, you know, they're now out of, they've gotten their master's or, you know, what have you, and they're playing and they're coming back to the Jazz House as teaching assistants. I see them every day of the week, you know, because we hire them to support our programs now and to mentor. And they are encouraging other young people. They see themselves in them. And so it really is it's that passing down of this art form. And it's so vital. And I think, Ralph, it's why this music is going to be in good hands. Because there are so many people who come, Eddie Palmieri, you know, it's important that he passed down this music. And so when he does that, then it's incumbent upon the next generation to do the same. And I think this is a really good time for jazz. I think that young people are really stepping up and stepping forward and kind of taking it different places. I mean, you go to a concert, you go to the Newport Jazz Festival, and Christian's got a whole, curating a whole stage for new young voices. And there's never a shortage of voices to be heard. So I think that's, and they're connecting with the audience. I think they're bringing young people in. Wouldn't you say that as well? They're, you know, they're also using multimedia, you know, and working with other creatives, you know, so that's also fascinating. You know, Ralph, that's kind of what you do. You're constantly mixing the mediums of the creative expression. And I think you're seeing more and more people in this music do the same.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you this, you know, we're always playing jazz at Pucci. And, you know, we started doing this playlist that we send out. I think we've done five. And I purposely did the classic jazz players, you know, you said Bud Powell and Clifford Brown and Lee Morgan and Modern Jazz Quartet, all the greats. But, you know, we're sending them out to our audience who would not typically jazz lovers, but little by little, they're commenting about how much they love it. And, you know, you just keep pushing that music on them, and the more, because they weren't in tune to it. They were listening to other things. But you can't believe how many emails I've received. Love the playlist, really great. Never heard of so-and-so, but I've checked into them, love them now. And that's what it's all about, experiencing new experiences. And for my audience, this was a new experience.
And talking about new experiences, I was so impressed to see how you had pivoted Jazz House Kids during the time of COVID, and everything was online this summer. When I saw your programming, I was just totally blown away. Obviously, COVID has changed everyone's lives, but tell us a little bit about how you guys were able to make that adjustment so seamlessly and sort of how life has changed since March when we were all affected by this huge global pandemic.
Mid-January, we were spending an evening with you, you know, it was incredible. And mid-March, the world had really changed. Nicole, I was so glad you came to sit in on a session. And that's actually one of the great things now. One of the silver linings, I think, is the fact that, you know, now when our supporters want to come in and check out a class, they literally can and check out a session. So, you know, I think we knew one thing we knew and one thing we didn't know, but we were going to figure out. What we knew was that we needed to keep going, that there was never on the table that we would stop and kind of close the doors and take a break.
Because we knew that could be something we couldn't recover from.
Right.
Taking a break, you know?
Yeah. And we have such a strong community, right? We have all of the students that come to the Jazz House, they come from about 50 different school districts in New Jersey, a few students from New York and Pennsylvania. We have all of the faculty, you know, who are part of the gig economy, that if we let it go, there would be no support for them. And so much of their world was eroded. And then we just felt that we would move forward. Now, what we didn't know was how to do that, right? But we had, you know, a great team of people at the Jazz House who are industrious and who were going to figure it out and saw this coming. Christian was actually in Europe with Chick Corea touring, and they were ahead of us, right? So we heard this and we knew about it. My head of music is from Austria. So, you know, it was very much that we were lagging here about this, and we saw that coming, and we started to research, you know, what would be the modalities that we would teach? How would we do this? How would we get students trained? How would we get information to our faculty? How would we get our parents on board? So it took about 2 weeks of a number of classes and get everybody on the same page. We missed one date. We missed March 15th. March 16th, 17 classes went online and we went straight ahead. March 20th, the Hang at Home listening party started. And that's something that we were doing every Friday night. And we had people who said, listen, you were our date every Friday night. We had a date with you. And when we did this, the world opened up. You know, we were now sort of reaching 50 kids from, you know, our students from 50 communities, we were touching 35 countries a week. We've reached over 400,000 people since March 20th. So what did that mean for programming? This summer, we had students, we had someone from Guam, we had students from London, we had Dominican Republic, we had a student from Malawi, a student from Latvia, we had a number of students from all across the state. So we had this rich, stew that really represented the global aspect of music. And so you would have a student get on and say, well, you know, in my country, the blues sound like this. We had students from Brazil and, you know, we were able to, you know, learn about Brazilian rhythms. And so, you know, this summer, you know, so we kind of struggled through the spring. And then we took all that, we figured out what worked best online and what didn't. And then we put that into the summer that you saw. And with that, we gained some more information. Our faculty got more versed in what it would take to teach online. We saw again what kind of works and doesn't work. And now we've started online for the fall. And just on Sunday, we had a Jazz Goes to College. And we had students from all across the state and out of the country who were interested in perhaps attending school in the States. So it's been a really important and learning. And what we found out is at the end of the day, Jazz House is a community, and it's about being there as a safety net. And we have heard from families who said, thanks for delivering food to us because we lost our job, to, you know, thanks for having something to have my son or daughter get up every single morning and get dressed, and thanks for being there. We had people who had COVID who would call in or were listening to us on Fridays or Wednesdays. So it's been a really, as difficult as it has been, it's been really gratifying knowing that we've tried to keep this community working, vibrant, intact, and thriving. And I think we have, you know, I think we have, and we don't think we go back. We think we go forward. And like this music, it goes straight ahead. And so there's going to be a lot of elements that we keep. This weekend, we just had a concert, our first outdoor concert with social distancing, and we learned that we can do that too. We can bring people together responsibly and have those live moments that we've missed so much. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we're growing along with it, and we're going to keep growing. But it really is about it's about moving it forward. And this music has always been fearless. So I think we're trying to take a page from this music that's fearless and moves forward.
No, I love it, Willis, because the same, you know, we take the same approach here at Pucci. It's like, you know, during this pandemic, what do? You pull back or do you move forward? We decided to move forward. We decided to, edit our manufacturing factory a little bit and decided to give it a bigger space to our showroom gallery, which we're calling Factory, which I can't wait for you guys to see. It's going to be for, a lot of creative projects are going to take place there. We could have pulled back, but you got to move forward. And that's what it's all about.
Hey, Ralph, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had someone like a Ray Brown who was like a bass mentor and sort of like just a second dad to me in many, many ways, you know, show me some things on the bass that I could never get from someone else. Who was your Ray Brown?
Who is my Ray Brown? It's funny, you know, Christian, when I was growing up, I was a big basketball fan. So it would be like, you know, Earl Monroe. It might've been Bill Bradley, but then I also love jazz, you know, and I started playing. First, I was telling someone last week, when I started playing drums, I think I started playing in fourth grade. Wilson Pickett was the first album I played. But then Elvin Jones, you know, I heard Ooh. Elvin Jones. So, you know, it was that type of people. Those were the influences. Those were the people that really knocked my socks up and down. Tony Williams. I saw Tony Williams, you know, Tony Williams' Lifetime. I was telling someone that I saw Tony Williams Lifetime, and nobody saw Tony Williams Lifetime. I said, I did at the Capitol Theater, and it was Tony Williams on drums. It was Khaled Yasin Young, Larry Young on organ, John McLaughlin on guitar.
Oh, you saw the original Lifetime.
Yeah, and Jack Bruce. And so my friend said, nobody saw them. I said, I did. And then, I was always into music. So, Elvin Jones, I think, is in drums, and then maybe Earl Monroe in basketball.
Yeah.
But those were guys that really, and then, of course, I went into the arts as I got older in film and, then all the classics. But those were my roots.
Wow, man.
Those were the roots. But talking about music and Tony Williams, what's it like, Christian, being a musician? Like, I get up every day, Melissa gets up every day. We all get up and go to, the jobs, and we try to be on as much as we can. But you are going to have to be on in front of an audience. And I know you perform a lot. So what's it like, you get, is that 8 to 30 gig and then the 10:30 gig? You really have to be on all the time. Is it difficult?
Well, I think this whole pandemic has so upset the flow of kind of what we do as musicians. I got to tell you, this weekend, these two fundraising events we had, Jazz by Starlight, and then the weekend before, I played a fundraiser for the Biden-Harris campaign. That was the first time I played two full-scale gigs, since mid-March. And I got to tell you, I'm out of shape, man. I don't care how much you play here in the house. It's not the same as being performance ready. So, my fingers had gotten a little soft and, got to play that bass play real hard with a full band. Man, my fingers look like mincemeat at the end of the night, when things are going as our regularly scheduled programming happens again, the mindset that you have to be in to perform, and again, Melissa can attest to this, you do have to be on all the time. You don't have to be on just on your instrument. There has to be a connection with the audience. There has to be a connection with the band. You have to be in a mental place that you can be able to really pour your soul out to the audience for 60 minutes, take a 45-minute break in which you have to greet your fans, eat dinner, relax, and repeat it all again, for the next show. And, up until the mid-90s, you had to do that for three shows per night. When I first moved to New York, the Village Vanguard, you played three sets a night, every night, Tuesday through Sunday. Bradley's, you played three sets a night with an hour off in between shows. So that's a long wait because you kind of lose your momentum. So you play a 10 o'clock show, a 12 o'clock show, and a 2 o'clock show, And there's a lot of mental weight that goes into being prepared to play a concert. Not just, being fluent on your instrument is, that's just part of the job, So I think what musicians do to prepare for a show, it's not that much different than what athletes have to do to prepare for a game.
Yep.
And people sometimes don't understand sort of the solitude is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I realize more than anything now, 10 or 15 minutes before a performance, I need silence. I don't want anybody talking to me. I don't want anybody asking me any questions. I want dead silence in a room so I can kind of
get ready.
But that's hard to come by at jazz clubs because they're so tiny. So I'll just go stand outside.
Yeah. Absolutely. So obviously the daily rhythm of things has changed in the past 6 months or so, but when things go back to normal, one of our favorite questions to ask is describe your perfect day. So not in the life of a pandemic, but when the city opens back up fully, what would you two do on a day off that would just make you both absolutely thrilled?
Oh, I know it. It is so terribly.
I want her to answer on my behalf.
First of all, we're going to walk out of the house without a mask on. We're going to leave our bag behind of our sprays, our hand sanitizers, our gloves, you know, all of that, right? I'm going to go to a restaurant. Let's go to a restaurant.
Let's go to a restaurant.
You know, I want to, we haven't done very little dining, you know. We're going to go to a restaurant and savor every little morsel, you know. Go for a walk, and I want to go to a movie. I want to go into a movie house and watch a movie. And then maybe catch some late jazz somewhere, you know, get to the Vanguard or go over to Dizzy's. And, but, you know, like, it's got to be everything, right? We got to get out and go for a walk, have dinner, catch a movie, and then go to a show. You know, just all of those things that we took so for granted, you know, never in my wildest imagination would I think that those things would not be available to us. But all of those things involve being out and around people. I can't wait for that.
Now that sounds like what we're going to do, like that. That's like the first week of once everything is over, right? Now, I have to say this pandemic in many ways has been, I haven't minded it so much because, you know, I spend my life on the road. I spend my life on buses and airports going to the next gig. Being in my own house has been so wonderful. You know, I've enjoyed being at home, spending time with Melissa, not having to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to the airport, you know. So for me, a lot of the perfect days have been inside the last 7 months or 8 months, whatever it's been, you know. A perfect day for me is waking up whenever I want to.
That's a really good point.
Putting my pajamas on and go sit in front of the television and watch football all day long with a bag of Doritos and that grapefruit beer.
I guess that's why we're on a cleanse right now. You know, that's interesting because your days are typically highly regimented, right?
Yes.
You've got to be here. You've got at this interview. You've got to get on this bus, get ready. And so that's really funny to see the difference.
Yeah. Is there any big plans for, I mean, obviously, you know, who knows when this is all going to end, but do you have any big tours lined up for next year with anyone specifically?
Yeah.
Well, a couple, but we're hoping that things will pass so we can actually make them happen. Two tours that were supposed to happen this year, two big tours, which have just now been moved to next year, are the Joshua Redman Quartet Reunion, with myself and Brad Meldow and Brian Blade, and the Chick Corea Trio, again with Brian Blade. So let's hope to, and in the fall of next year, I'll be going to Europe, hopefully with my big band, with our featured vocalist, Melissa Walker.
Oh, wow, fantastic.
Awesome.
And your Movement Revisited, hopefully will play at NJ PAC. And
yes.
You know, I don't know if you guys know, he did this incredible epic piece called The Movement Revisited with four voices. Well, tell them about it.
Yeah,
so it's music written to the words of Rosa Parks, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., and Muhammad Ali, with the end of the piece, those four voices speaking Barack Obama's 2008 victory speech. So, that recording was released finally after 7 years in the vault, back in February, and we had a big concert scheduled to play it live at NJ PAC in November. Obviously, that's not going to happen now, so we have plans to have that go on in the spring.
Definitely something to look forward to. That sounds awesome. I can't wait to Google that after this conversation and listen. So the question we always end with is, what advice would you give to someone trying to break into your industry?
So that's so hard because there's not just one piece of advice.
What are some of the things that
I would say one thing that would help is if you had a goal, because I find that a lot of young musicians, they're really talented. They can really play. They have a lot of vocabulary. I said, okay, well, what do you want to do with that? Well, I don't really know. You know, I want to get a gig. Okay, well, you want to get a gig where? With who? How? Why? You know what I mean? So I would say set up some real serious goals for yourself. When I was a teenager and I fell in love with this music, I started listening to all of these people like Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. That was my favorite band. I wanted to play with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. So I'm going to get every Art Blakey record I can get, study all of the music. Whenever he comes to Philadelphia, I'm going to be that pain in the butt kid on the side of the stage. Like, please, Mr. Blakey, can I sit in? You know, no, okay, get away from here. And I expected that, right? That's probably what should have happened. But I knew I was going to keep on going back because I wanted it that bad, you know. And in the process of learning all of the music from Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, because Art Blakey didn't write, I wound up learning all of the music of Freddie Hubbard, Wayne Shorter, Lee Morgan, Benny Golson, Hank Mobley, Clifford Brown, Cedar Walton, Bobby Watson, James Williams. So I wound up not playing with Art Blakey. It just didn't work out. But I wound up working with almost every single person that I just named because I learned all of their music.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Melissa, what about you? What piece of advice would you give to someone?
Well, I think when I look at the arts, if I was looking at that field, it's about building a community and learning from others and being open to build that community. I look at you guys and you're part of a community that we built. And I think that's the greatest element is that there's so many people that want to be a part of something and build that community with them. And it will resonate, it will expand, it will bring people in. And so I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned in the field that I've moved into is build a community of people who are passionate about serving others. And it in itself will just grow and grow and you'll learn. And I think the last thing that I've learned on and off the bandstand is learn from your struggles. Learn from when you fall down.
That's right.
You know, I've fallen down. The organization has fallen down as an artist. Those are the moments. Those are the moments where the true growth comes. So if you keep your eyes open and your ears and take those risks, then you'll build something, you know. Then you'll build a Poochie. Then you can become a Christian McBride. Then you can have a Jazz House Kids. When you're willing to learn from others, build a community, fall down and get up.
That's right.
And try it again. I think those are the lessons that I think have propelled me in the organization.
Amazing. I feel like that's really inspiring and a great note to end on.
Fantastic.
Thank you guys so much. We are grateful for your time and we know that our audience will really appreciate this conversation.
You guys are the best. We love you guys. Thank you for doing this. We look forward to the next Jazz House Kids and really just thank you so much. You're a dynamic couple.
Yeah. We can't thank you enough.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation with Christian McBride and Melissa Walker. To learn more about them, you can visit christianmcbride.com or jazzhousekids.org. Stay tuned for more incredible conversations this season. Thanks and enjoy the rest of your day.